If you don't know, you are listening to 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day. This is the 4th day of June, is that right? Yes. And this is episode number 87. And as always, I am joined by my fellow Sync not Douglas Bowles. How are you doing today, Doug?
I'm doing great. This evening we're going to investigate the difference between occulture and living knowledge. And we're going to do that with our guest, Jason Horsley. Mr. Horsley is an author, filmmaker, podcaster, and transmedia storyteller who has gone by many names. Most recently, driven by a desire to make sense phenomenal, Mr. Horsley has traveled inward and hit upon an idea he calls occulture, which transforms an apparent disability, autism, into a new paradigm and an alternate way of perceiving the world and the self, a human response to the unnatural limitations of consensus reality. More information regarding this philosophy can be found at occulture.com. Mr. Horsley has written a number of books under various names, which are listed in the book section at occulture. He has also contributed a chapter to last year's Think Book Volume 2 entitled Occulture versus Living Knowledge. While sure his life is a fiction, he has yet to meet the author. Welcome. Thank you for coming on, Jason. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah. Thank you for the invitation. I just mentioned to Alan I got a bit of a stomach bug. I'm hoping that I will overcome that limitation and be at my best.
Well, sorry for that.
Well, thank you for toughing it out. That's appreciated.
Yeah, I'm always about bringing it back to the body, so I guess that's why I felt compelled to mention that, and that's always my reference point, as you may have picked up. So that's the reality that I'm transmitting to you from.
The enlightenment of the body. And we talk a lot about the enlightenment of the body or going into the body.
Uh-huh.
Is that, you know, I wonder if you would allow me to call you an anti-synchromistic.
No, I don't want to be an anti-anything at all, although I do fall for that temptation from time to time, and I think it wouldn't be unfair if you did label me that. But it's kind of partly congenital, and then it's also, there's a spontaneous aspect to it also. I mean, I'm congenitally opposed to any sort of systems of belief or philosophy, and for whatever reason, maybe, you know, something deep in my personal history. But specifically with synchromysticism, I've always kind of looked at it with squinty eyes. So then when I was invited to contribute, I did think, well, what do they want me to say? Because I'm not a synchromystic. And so that was what I said in so many words.
So the sync books, to the best of my knowledge, are not necessarily mutually exclusive with synchromysticism, but what is your relationship to synchronicity?
Well, I mean, as you know, it came from Jung, and I'm kind of a student of Jung. Well, that's probably putting it too strongly. I haven't read that many of his books, but I do see myself as kind of indebted to him and what some of his discoveries. Synchronicity, not so much. I said on a recent audio at the Crucial Fictions thing, and it was one of those things that just came to me while we were talking, that the animistic view may be a kind of immature view, and I don't mean that in terms of individuals, but in terms of the species. And I think that synchronicity is, by its very nature, it's just the fabric of the universe that we live in. So I don't know how much... I mean, of course, I pay attention to it, but I don't know how much there is to say about it, really, because that's kind of just c'est la vie, you know. This is, we're living in a conscious universe, and we're not separate from it. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question or not.
No, it does. Well, so you're kind of the nexus of all these various tendrils. It seems like there's a number of things that you write about subject-wise, but then they connect back to the body and your own philosophy that you've begun developing. Can we start with Oak culture? And thus, what is Oak culture?
Well, you'll have to remind me, because I just came up with that for the piece, and yeah, it's been
well,
so long.
I thought that was just the signifier for various systems that you end up deconstructing, whether it's synchromysticism or UFO abductees or various shamanic traditions or
right.
Seems
I
like
guess
you,
yeah.
Definition by opposition.
It does seem like I'm the deconstructing guy, and I guess I didn't really choose to be that consciously, and I've been almost trying to not be that. Not, I was going to say get out of the box, but I don't feel like people are putting me in the box, because I just don't. But it is, yeah, it's very, I mean, I've put forward the metaphor more recently of gold prospecting because of my experience, apprenticeship in that. Apprenticeship's putting it too strongly, but I've been hanging out with a gold prospector anyway, learning a little bit. And about getting to the bedrock, and to get to the bedrock, which is where the gold will be, you have to move away all the dirt. So I would see the dirt in this analogy with as analogous to our assumptions, our beliefs. And that's the process that I'm involved with, is self-examination in order to try and identify all of the beliefs and theories and opinions and perspectives, assumptions that that I've accumulated and that have formed like this crust around me, if you will, or on my perception, preventing me from actually finding the bedrock of who I am and what's going on. So then that process, for better or for worse, gets extended outward because I'm a writer and because I'm interested in all these subjects. I started it with movies, see. Like as a movie critic, like as a young, like when I was 13, I was writing movie criticism. So you could say that was sort of the bedrock of my own development as a writer. And I'm still kind of, I don't know about locked into, but that's still my tendency, is to look at things with a critical eye and deconstruct them to see what's really there. So with movies, it wasn't just are they good or are they bad, but also what's the unconscious of the filmmaker communicating here that maybe he or she doesn't even know.
Right.
And so then you see how to extend that to ufology or synchromysticism or individuals like Whitley Strieber, then it's the same. I think it's basically the same process.
Okay, wait, there's all this talk about you and Strieber, but I have yet to read it on a personal level. What's this about?
Well, I'm glad to hear that there's lots of talk about it, because I'm not really aware of that. What's it about? Well, the sort of surface version is I wrote an article about him in 2008, which is right before I started Stormy Weather and ALS Capus, that whole lark. And then I revisited it in 2012, wrote a larger version. And then just recently I've embarked on this project, crucialfictions.com, which is based around a written piece, book-length written piece called The Prisoner of Infinity, which is the psychohistory of Whitley Strieber, looking at trauma, transhumanism, transformation. But Strieber is really just a case study for me, like a blood sample, if you will, of the whole UFO alien abduction organism, if I can call it that, continue to extend the metaphor, to see what's going on there. And that's, again, because it has this personal resonance for me, like I was sucked into down Strieber's rabbit hole when I was just in my very early 20s. And apparently I haven't actually made it through or out of it, because it's just had this very profound impact on my psyche, and that's what I'm kind of looking at. So, again,
do you consider yourself an abductee?
Not if you put it that way, no. Like, I don't go around with a badge or a calling card.
You feel that you have had contact in a very Strieber-esque way?
definitely not a very Streber-esque way, I'm glad to say. I mean, there's no real short answer.
You've never been penetrated.
Well, we shouldn't laugh, I guess. Anyway, I don't know is the answer to that one. I mean, I'll try and sum up very quickly, if I can, my position on this or my experience, and that is that we're talking about here a form of energy, a form of conscious energy that is not non-physical but inorganic, but that interfaces with our own psyches and so is shaped and determined by them to some extent, like it interacts with us as individuals. So my experiences have been always of this some mostly formless conscious energy interacting with my psyche, and I've been aware that there was an option, if that's not putting it too simply, of allowing it to materialize through my beliefs, and I've just toyed with that option and had Streber-esque experiences of gray beings sort of sexually molesting me, let's say, enough to say, okay, that's not for me, that is not the kind of experience that I want or I need, because this isn't an essentially organic, well, it is an organic process, but it's not, we don't even have terms for it, because they say non-physical, it's energy, energy is physical, but these aren't beings in the usual sense of the word, I don't think.
And so then, the crucial fiction, what does that refer to?
That's a great question, because it came up with the name for the website after weeks of trying to find something really memorable and that hadn't already been bought on the internet. And we struck upon, this is my wife and I, crucialfictions.com, and it just seemed right. But I didn't exactly know why it was right. So it's been in the process of doing this project, not just writing the piece, but the dialogues I've been having with people, that I've discovered just how right it is. And the idea of crucial fiction at its widest level is that of the false narrative of the ego that we are conditioned into or programmed into going along with, and then that we basically maintain with our own, we just keep feeding it, like the plant in Little Shop of Horrors, we just keep feeding it our belief, and we keep investing in this false narrative. But it is crucial, the idea that I'm approaching with the connection between ufology and alien abduction experiences with trauma, is that those of us, and it may be all of us, who had these deeply traumatic formative experiences, we had to split off our psyche. There was a fragmentation of the psyche, and that created this dissociated ego self. I call it the guardian, or it's been called the guardian by psychotherapy, that is essentially a fiction, but it's a fiction that protects us from the full brunt of that trauma, or that did at that time when we needed this dissociative state to escape into. It's become, because it was very formative, self-consciousness, it's an unconscious process, and it's like a virus that's running the hard drive now. We can't actually stop doing it because we're not aware of doing anything at all. We think this fiction is who we are.
Right. And so it seems like, I think if people have a problem with the Streber piece, it's because where you take that is that the crucial fiction is the UFO narrative, and the truth is the trauma, the trauma, but then the crucial fiction protects us from the trauma, but the real point is to get back and embody the trauma?
Is that right. Do people have problem with the Streber piece? I'm curious.
No, I'm just... I'm saying if they have a problem, because it seems like I read quite a bit of your stuff over the last couple of days, and I know that has Christopher Knowles kind of had an antagonizing relationship with you at various points?
You threatened to bring that up in your email. Doug, actually. I'm not sure who I'm talking to here. Somebody, Doug did. No, that wasn't. That wasn't. Well, who's to say, really? Because that came up very unexpectedly and very quickly, and it was one of those things that snowballed, and you know, it was practically all over by the time I really realized how much it had escalated. And that was ostensibly over the image at the Crucifixion site, which Chris objected to. He never said why, and to be honest, I didn't ask because I got kind of triggered. But no, it wasn't specific. I mean, it's hard to say. You'd have to ask Chris. But I think to take it to the larger question, I do think that Crucifixions and what I'm doing now is inherently threatening to, well, ufology, and that doesn't include Chris Knowles. I don't see him as a ufologist at all. But like a whole paradigm, really. It's not just the UFO belief, but also the belief that psychic powers are a natural evolutionary stage and that they're going to save us, and also space travel, the whole idea that space travel is necessary to get off the planet. I'm looking at some very sacred cows and basically doing my best to slaughter them.
Right.
I don't pay attention to Knowles' point of view. Is Knowles for all of these sacred cows?
Well, again, you'd have to ask Chris about that. Yeah, I don't want to speak for Chris.
Okay.
The other interesting aspect to this that I haven't explored far enough to really answer, but the social engineering question. So it seems like in the Strieber case study, part of that trauma somehow was part of a larger conspiracy. Did I get that right?
Yes, it's this idea that trauma is a way to tap into our psychic potential, and therefore is a way to accelerate evolution. This idea is in Strieber's work, and it's everywhere actually. If you start looking for it and noticing it, you'll see that it's really a theme, a strain running through a great deal of spiritual, stroke, magical writings and teachings and all the rest of it. And also, right, like inseparably, I would say that spiritual realization or spiritual enlightenment is synonymous with or even connected to psychism, like development of psychic potential. See, I kind of believed that without thinking about it for years. I just thought they went hand in hand, but it's been driven home to me. The two things are totally unrelated, I would say. That's my position now. Anyway.
Okay.
But I think that trauma will develop your psychic powers. I mean, if it's manipulated or directed in the right way, but that causes this fragmentation. So you may develop a sort of spiritualized super uber ego, but that's the further from enlightenment than you were before, I think. And I have the same, I won't say position, but maybe even experience with psychedelics.
So, and then the other really hallmark I noticed in a lot of your writing is that a lot of the things in common about these things that you're deconstructing is they tend to be body disassociative and then mind or consciousness based. There was a quote, logically the body is conscious before the mind even exists.
Mm-hmm. Was that me? Did I say that?
Yeah, you certainly did.
Are you good?
You're like, I like and that it, one. That one's good. Yeah.
It hits on this idea of living knowledge that you explore in the Sync Book 2 piece. Which, you know, is this idea that so much of the philosophy or new agey type spiritual movements now are really looking, you know, could we talk about the 2012 rapture and, you know, what you thought about it before, your relationship to that, and then, you know, after, and how the people that really thought we might rapture off, you know, what is your take on all that?
Well, I was in Guatemala in 2012, and not on the day itself, but I've been hanging out with, well, I would say hanging out with Mayans. That makes it sound very romantic. but certainly enough to know that the Mayans didn't really think much in 2012. I mean, or at least if they did, it had nothing to do with what you're describing, that people in the West were hoping for. And I didn't, 2012, well, I mean, I guess I've been more and more moving towards this acceptance, which is very central to the Crucifixion's UFO analysis, that reality is inner. It's an inner shift that we're all waiting for. And if we're honest, that's what we want. We want a shift in a way that we can be clear and light and joyous and free and healthy. That's what we want. I mean, we don't necessarily want the aliens to land or whatever, you know, whatever scenario we're imagining, that's kind of projecting that outward. So what was I saying? The inner shift. Yeah, well, 2012, I mean, for me, it was a pretty big year. I didn't get enlightened or anything, but I'd say it was a pretty major shift. So a shift makes it sound like a one thing that happened at one moment, so perhaps that's not the right word, but it was a turning point. Well, actually, the last 3 years have been turning points, probably, right. But yeah, particularly
last, 2008, around that time was like, you could even see the mm-hmm. shift financially, like all of a sudden, old systems didn't make sense anymore. But you could go back even further, 2001, 1997, this whole Jose
right,
Arias.
And 1,000 years ago, and 2,000 years right. ago, and 7,000 years ago. I mean, these shifts, the question is really is, well, is it really leading to some eschaton endpoint, or is it not? And more, perhaps more pertinent, do we care? I mean, does it matter? Everyone wants to be there for the end of the world and have a front row seat, but I think it's more distraction, really, from the inner landscape.
Well, we're talking about evolution here. There's no doubt about it. But I wonder if you think that, you know, systems like Strieber, system like Knowles, system like Castaneda, or a system like even like Jake Kotze's, are these anti-evolutionary? Do you think that they're... I mean, where's the breakdown?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't put Knowles or Kotze in the class of Castaneda and Strieber, because I don't think either of them are propagating, you know, the practices that are supposed to accelerate evolution. But that aside, I would question the whole idea of evolution. And in fact, I was today with somebody. I'll say what I said to them. And evolution is not the business of individuals. Evolution is what happens to the species. We don't evolve unless you want to take Strieber at his word and, you know, hang out with the aliens who are going to accelerate your metabolism and give you white liquid to drink and traumatize you and make your brain expand. And I mean, the whole autism phenomenon that's evolution in action. And look at it, you know, it's a bunch of retards, as far as most people are concerned. So I don't think we have a clue, really. I know I'm not supposed to say that, but
can you speculate as to why that is? What is...
Episode 87. Episode 87 is about retards and anal probing.
And the undiscovered connection between the two.
So, sorry.
Somebody about to ask a serious question?
That makes me giggly. I'm sorry.
Well, hopefully my point isn't lost. That, Evolution. I see it as just a more fantasy, because evolution by definition is taking care of itself. It doesn't need our help. I mean, that's just craziness.
Yeah,
I think I think we need some clarification on how autism and evolution are related.
Well, I see it as perception, like everything. I would bring everything back to perception, like body perception and then the inner senses, which is the psyche, intuition, all that stuff, but perception, either way you look at it. And perception is a spectrum. It's a very wide spectrum, because it spans from amoebae, which perceive, or rocks and stuff, I believe, perceive to some level, rudimentary, all the way to, you know, stars and galaxies. They also perceive, because it's a collection of all these perceivers within. So what we think of as beings, you could say, is the part of the spectrum of perception. Now, human beings are perceivers in a very particular way. We have self-awareness, so that's part of it. But also, we seem to have, maybe related, a wide spectrum of perception within the species itself. Like if you take one cat in Tasmania and take another cat in Guatemala, another one in London, England, they all perceive more, it's cat perception, right? That's the cat reality that they're perceiving. Whereas human beings, I mean, maybe there's not a wider spectrum as we think between, say, you and I, or you know, people who take psychedelics and people who don't. But between a neurotypical and an autist, like a really low-functioning autist, there is a huge, there's a gulf of perception because they can't even communicate. So my intuition about that being on the spectrum myself, where I would, as I wouldn't identify myself as an abductee, I would be fine identifying myself as an autistic. My sense is that because the spectrum of perception is like one spectrum, the autism phenomenon is a necessary balancing or correcting of an imbalance in this overly materialist reductionist, I'm not really having the words for this, ego-based, identity-based, our senses have shut down, really. I don't see autists as often some psychic otherworld, although I think that some of them really are like babies, so they're not even in their bodies. I think that's true, but I see it more as that their perceptions are fully open, and so they're perceiving like far more than we are because they haven't put that filter or that reducing valve of the ego. They haven't fixed it onto their, you know, their organism. It hasn't taken over the organism completely. So that would be like if anything's evolving, it's perception. So I'd see autism as like a perceptual capacity that we all have that we've shut down, and therefore is having to. There's a whole section of the populace that's having to pick up the slack for that, that's having to perceive more than they're able to perceive because most people are perceiving far less than we're able to perceive.
Far, far less.
Yeah.
Could the planetary system kind of spur the type of evolution necessary to rid itself, or not rid itself, but neutralize a pest?
Which is neutralize a pest? You mean the ego?
Yeah. Well, I'm saying humanity. So I'm trying to understand.
I have a real problem when people start talking about humanity as a disease or a boil on the boob of
no,
the planet.
Well, I mean, obviously, if you think, you know, we're doing great, you know, like as a species.
Well, back to the...
As far as the whole goes, you know, the system, we're kind of...
Well, it depends how far out you take it, you see. Because if you keep it to the social system, yeah, no one's going to argue with you there, at least not on this show, that it's well and truly fucked up. But if you take it to a larger system, as in the biosphere and the solar system, everything's fine. And also if you take it inward... to the nervous system, well, that's an individual thing. Like as I said, you know, I got a bit of food poisoning or a bit of stomach bug or something, so I'm very far from 100%, but I've got all my limbs and, you know, I'm more or less doing okay. So I think it's a question, if you choose to focus on society and all of its ills and its evils, then, yeah, you're going to come away with this idea that the human species is fucked up and it's a virus and all of that stuff, but I think that it's not accurate. I think that there is something, there is a pest, but I wouldn't say it's humanity. I'd say it's something that's installed itself in humans, and it's called the ego.
Right, and so it seems like you said you have a tendency to slaughter the sacred cows, but one of the things that happens with sacred cows is they're signifiers that end up becoming, you know, concrete, and people mistake them for the signified, not knowing that they're merely a pointer and that you're supposed to access the truth through the sacred cow, and all of a sudden the sacred cow becomes the thing. And so we get stuck in our symbols, which is kind of, it seems like, at the heart of, like, Crucial Fictions and all your work, that even, you know, so culture or writing or just the various things that we've developed as a species are now between us and a real perception of life, or a real experience of life.
Yeah, I think that's true. But then it's the chicken or an egg thing. I mean, a rotten fruit comes from a rotten tree. It's not the fruit that make the tree rotten. So, like, if our cultures or the artifacts or the systems are the way that you describe, it's because of the energy that was imbued in them. You know, why we created them. We created them unaware of the unconscious drives that were behind it. This is why, you know, one, another of the sacred cows that I'm trying to slay is spirituality, essentially, or the whole idea of trying to attain enlightenment, even though I'm doing it myself. But
that's an evolutionary process, though. I mean, everybody strives to become better, and then everybody becomes better. I mean, look, we can argue about 2012 all we like, but the fact of the matter is, at least technologically, we're in a whole new ballgame now. Do you know what I mean? And technology is a part of evolution. It has evolved. You couldn't have the steam engine before the wheel. Like, one begat the other.
Right. So this is a linear thing that you're describing. I mean, as soon as you say evolution, you're talking about time, right?
Right. Well, it depends on how you define the human race. What are we? I mean, that's like the existential question. I'm very much aware of that.
Yeah.
But I like the division of life into three separate groups, where you have plants, which just basically bind the energy from the sun, animals, which bind space together, so they move the energy from the plants from one place to wherever they shit, and then you have the third group, which is us, which we bind knowledge. And the evolution is the passing down, or at least the human, you know, manifestation of evolution is that we bind time. We don't bind space, but I can read a book written by Lao Tzu from 800 years before Christ, and it's like a little text message that I'm getting from him. But his knowledge translates over to me, and, you know, you build off of that. But because of that, I mean, 2012 is a breakthrough point, because, I mean, we have handheld computers. That shit's crazy.
Well, okay, that's one thing that happened. You know, I went to Finland and hung out with Dave O'Shaughnessy and had a taste of the transmission, and that was another thing that happened. But so for me, that's a lot more real. Like
the experience. You're saying that all you have in life is your experience.
Well, I wasn't saying that, but I mean, that's a reasonable kind of deduction for what I was saying. But I think what I was trying to say is that knowledge, I mean, yes, you could read Lao Tzu, and possibly you could get the transmission of Lao Tzu from that, the energy, the living conscious energy that is eternal, that it was moving through him when he wrote those words. I think that's possible, that would be what a holy book is, so to speak, is something that actually carries that transmission energy. But it's also more likely that you get a crappy translation, or you just don't grok it, and really you're just reading dead knowledge. So knowledge, and this is in the occult piece, I think, that's what it's largely about. The only kind of knowledge that counts is living knowledge, which is direct knowledge, which can't be stored. I don't believe it can be stored or categorized or... I was going to say not passed on. I think it can be passed on, but only as this living energy. So I might be talking to you now, and it might seem like I've got these ideas or even this information or this knowledge or who knows what, but actually none of that counts. The only thing that counts is the energy that is moving through me that is animating these words, and that these words are little carrier devices, delivery devices for that energy of the transmission.
Okay, so is living knowledge, is like this living energy that you're talking about, how does that equate as far as paranormal experiences like Strieber's or like K. Dix or like all of these different individuals under the umbrella of Jeffrey Kripal's studies who have influenced pop culture? I mean, it was based off the stories of their lives. I mean, is the story the same thing as an ego would be another question I would have for you too.
Yeah, I think that's what we're getting to here with that question, is that, you know, everybody experiences the transmission. I'm using David Shannon's term, but I think it's a good one. The transmission is the source energy that brings everything into being. So we all experience that, because by definition, we wouldn't be here without it. But then certain individuals, for whatever reason, they get a bigger dose of it, not necessarily because they're enlightened, usually not, but for whatever reason, maybe because of trauma, maybe because of drugs, but they have these big life-changing experiences that seem transcendental, and they're encountering this living conscious energy, having direct interface with it, and it turns their life upside down. And I think I may be wrong, but the stories that we get are more like the coping mechanisms. Like Philip K. Dick, he wrote, I mean, how many pages? The exegesis, like 1,000 pages. Like, he spent the last 10 years of his life.
Shit,
or
that's just what they give you. That's not even like the entire filing cabinet.
Right, that's right. So he became obsessed with figuring it out, even though he had enough self-awareness to know and admit that he never would. And what? I don't know. I mean, yeah, that was his way of coping. I think that was his way of not letting that energy actually take him over, just take over his life, and just becoming that living conscious energy and letting go of all of his beliefs and all of his structures and all of his identification points with it. He was a writer like Strieber, like Castaneda, like me, and he had to, he was compelled, it was crucial for him to turn it into fiction. Of course, he was doing that his whole life before it happened. He was a fiction writer. Strieber was too. So when it happened, he didn't know what else to do. And he made a great story. And now we think Philip K. Dick's really cool. I mean, I've got his book. I think he's great. But I don't want to follow his example. I really don't. I don't want those
There's
big
a quote
experiences.
That you used a couple times where I hope they don't make a grim religion from my body of work. I think that
Strieber.
Was a Strieber quote. Yeah. But you can think about that in terms of Philip K. Dick too. Because
right, a lot of people who are unfamiliar with K. Dick would take him as a second-rate L. Ron Hubbard, you know, just somebody who's trying to start a religion or something.
Well, I don't know. You'd have to.
I've had that experience where I'm trying to turn people on to K. Dick, and they look at it skeptically, like, "Oh, what is this shit?" Like, no, you don't understand. This is awesome. Like, read
well,
this
maybe
page.
Maybe they're responding to you, though, right? If they think you're trying to induct them into the Philip K. Dick church. Because I don't think Dick really, he was kind of the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Except that he did do that one speech in France or whatever it was. But even that, I mean,
I heard that he regretted that. That whole scene that happened at that sci-fi conference, like the good footage that everyone's who's interested has probably seen. I heard that was a big mistake in his life, like, because he didn't have it. By the time he did that, he was still writing the exegesis, and he wrote it for long after that conference too. So he knew he didn't have it figured out.
No, but you can't, you see. You really, I don't think we can figure it out. Like, we have this idea, and it's indoctrinated into us, that we need to understand whatever it is in order to get it. So enlightenment, what is it? Once I figure out what it is, I'll know how to get it, or I'll just have it. Like, understanding it will be it. But the nature of the transcendental, and this is true of the UFO too, is that we can't ever understand it. Like, our understanding actually comes between us and the experience of it. Well, not, it's not really understanding, but our attempt to understand. And insofar as we kid ourselves that we understand, then we've missed it.
And so that's interesting. So what are you seeking? Are you seeking an answer? Is it the truth? It's not knowledge. Can you answer that? Or like a spiritual seeker?
Well, I'm seeking enlightenment, and that's why I'm hanging out with Eva Shana over in Finland. I think he's genuinely enlightened, and I just love hanging around that. But in terms of the rest of my life, he says the same. There's nothing you can actually do to get enlightened, so just relax and enjoy life. And I would say, like all these stuff that we're talking about, the stuff I do, that's just stuff I do. I mean, it's having an impact or an effect on my own psyche, and that's affecting my body. And so then I'm doing my best to observe the effects and gauge, okay, is this a good thing for me to be doing? I don't think that I'm going to work out, solve the riddle of my own psyche, and then that's it. I'll be made whole by that seeing. I think it's not a mental thing. It's something that's happening in the body, and this is a way to like direct my attention. Like I'm directing my attention when I write about Striever, I'm directing my attention to Striever. When I write about UFOs, I'm directing my attention to whatever that is. And that, I was thinking of the parallel of psychedelics, because I don't do any of that stuff now. I think they harm the body, and I can't afford to harm this body. But I think it's kind of a milder version than that, like thought experiments. You enter into a different headspace, and that does stir up unconscious material in the body. And then that's an opportunity to integrate that. And I guess there's something is happening now. As I say, it's a mystery. The mind is the last part of us to know what's going on. So I have to actually say I don't know, if I'm going to be completely honest and complete the point that I'm trying to make. I don't know, but it's in the body, whatever it is.
Douglas, are we getting close?
We're done. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Jason Horsley in 42 Minutes, production of ThinkBook Radio and ThinkBook.com. More information about the work of Mr. Horsley and Autoculture can be found at autoculture.com and Crucial Fictions, crucialfictions.com. For more information about the ThinkBook, our guests, check out past shows or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at thethinkbook.com/42minutes. If you like what you hear and would like to support the show, by all means, please follow the link on the website to the donation page. Thank you and have a wonderful Tuesday.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that was wonderful. Thank you. It was enwrapped.